Hello and welcome to another episode of the Southern Plains Podcast. My name is Clay Pope. I'm with the USDA Southern Plains Climate Hub in El Reno, Oklahoma. And this podcast is a joint venture of the Hub and the Redlands Community College Division of Agriculture, also located in El Reno. We want to thank each and every one of you for taking time out of your day to listen to the podcast. And on our episode today, we have as a guest, Dee Dee Piershaus. Dee Dee Piershaus is an author. She's someone who's worked extensively in soil health, but most importantly, she's been the individual who put together some curriculum in partnership with the Hub a few years back. Curriculum's name is Understanding Soil Health and Watershed Functions. And Dee Dee, we appreciate you taking time out of your day to come and visit with us on the podcast and talk a little bit about some of the work that you're doing.
Thanks, Clay. It's great to be here with you.
Now, Dee Dee, you work with a group called the Soil Carbon Coalition, and that might be the best place to start. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the coalition, how you got involved with them, and some of the work that the coalition does?
Sure. So the Soil Carbon Coalition was founded by a group before I got involved. Back, I believe it was in 2008 or 2011, somewhere in there. And they started a monitoring project where Peter Donovan primarily was traveling from place to place in a converted school bus and monitoring change over time in soil carbon at some of the best ranches and farms in the country to see what was possible. And the idea was that if you want to figure out how fast a human being can run, you don't convene a panel of experts or look up all the research, you run a race. And so this was kind of a race to see who was doing what where and what was working so that we could really identify who the front runners were in terms of bringing back soil health. One of the big measures of that can be soil carbon. So there are other measures that have come out in this project, such as water infiltration rates, bulk density, the amount of food that's being produced, the length of the green season in a grassland. Those kinds of things we're turning to increasingly because soil carbon has turned out to be a little bit more complex in terms of how quickly it responds to management, whereas some of those others are a little bit clearer indicators. So we have a map of change over time. And we also have an online app that people can use that is called atlasbiowork.com that's downloadable. You can use it offline. You can use it online. And it's got a bunch of forms to track change over time that go into an open database. So this is shared open data that can be used for all sorts of purposes. And I got involved with the Soil Carbon Coalition after I went through a huge flood here in Vermont and was already working on a book called The Ecology of Care that was looking at how to make communities and public health and healthcare systems more resilient. And that flood, which was part of Hurricane Irene, got me really thinking about what happens when water hits the land. And after seeing the effects of that firsthand, I really, really couldn't stop thinking about that wherever I drove, wherever I went, thinking what's going to happen the next time we have a big rain like that. And of course, in Vermont, all of our roads were a hilly landscape. All our roads are built on old deer paths, which all ran along brooks and streams. So you can imagine how much damage there was after that flood. So I started looking for ways to get involved with the intersection of climate, healthcare, you know, sort of public health and land function. And the Soil Carbon Coalition was the first project that I found that seemed like something that was really heading in the right direction of asking great questions. So I traveled around for quite a few years helping with that monitoring, teaching workshops, and the curriculum that I developed along with your climate hub was a way of taking a lot of those questions and putting them into a framework that teachers and other people could use around the world. And that's been the biggest surprise has been how many different kinds of groups besides high school teachers have taken that curriculum and used it.
You know, that's a good segue into my next question. Just how well, you know, you mentioned the curriculum and visiting a little bit about that for a second. How you said it's been well received, but that it's been picked up by people beyond what it was originally designed for. Why don't you talk a little bit about how the curriculum was originally designed, what you thought the initial audience for the curriculum was going to be, and maybe talk a little bit about how it's expanded beyond from its start and its original target audience, and how it's kind of been accepted out there in the great wider world.
Yeah, for me, I was transitioning from work as a natural healthcare provider to wanting to work on whole systems landscape function or soil health as a way of improving public health. That was my initial interest. And the thing that seemed like the best leverage point for me was to help develop training materials and curriculum around the concept of soil carbon. But as I was out working with ranchers for the Soil Carbon Coalition, I realized that most of the interesting conversations were not happening about the carbon cycle. They were happening about water and about infiltration rates and what happens with water. Everybody can see the connection to water because we all live with it. We play with it when we're kids. We drink it. We're made out of it. Whereas carbon is a little bit more abstract, and carbon has also become something that is a bit more of a wedge with the climate conversation. So I actually decided to, especially when I realized that one of the primary audiences, once you and I connected, was going to be the Oklahoma FFA program, I decided to use water as the framework for it rather than soil carbon. And I think that was a great decision. I think that made it much more understandable for people, much more clear why it was a necessary resource, and frankly, more fun exercises because you get to play more with water, which everybody likes doing. So that was kind of the development of it. I think it took two or three years to put that together. I'd done some technical writing before and have taught all my life one way or another. Whatever I'm learning, I like to turn around and teach as a way of learning it more clearly myself. And I found that doing the technical writing of trying to explain something is a very good way for me to get clear on the details as well, to be really accurate. So got a series of grants and put that together. And then it's gone out through several different channels. So it's gone out through the USDA Climate Hub, which we're not tracking those downloads because we're not allowed to collect emails there. But on the Soil Carbon Coalition website and on the Land and Leadership Initiative website and several other places, we can track, and we've created a Google form that people sign on to give just a little information about themselves and their project in exchange for being able to download this 158-page free resource. And what astounded me was that in addition to a lot of teachers, the people who were downloading it were from, I think we've had 50 different countries, people doing projects, everything from like French cheese making associations to permaculture farms in Vietnam. The UN Farmer Field School Program has picked it up as a big resource. And actually my project for this past 6 months has been to expand a lot of those activities to write a new manual for the Zero Budget Natural Farming Initiative in Andhra Pradesh, India, where they have half a million farmers already have adopted it. I think projects in most states and over 50 countries have been downloading it and many of them using it. So one thing it did for me was to give me a picture of how many really cool projects there are around the world of people getting together to think about how land works and how water does or doesn't get into the soil sponge, which is the language I've developed for talking about that intersection of structure and function in the soil.
Well, tell us a little bit about how the curriculum is structured. There might be some individuals who are classroom teachers that are listening today or just interested in maybe utilizing this in their educational efforts. Talk to us a little bit about how it's structured and how it's put together and some of the standards that it meets and just some of the nuts and the bolts about the curriculum.
Yeah, so there's an introduction that gives a little bit of the pedagogical overview that they're teaching philosophy. And one of the things that I really like to do is to have students of any age frame their own questions. People tend to be a lot more engaged that way. So there are prompts for helping students to think about what their questions might be around a topic and then ways for them to explore those questions, first of all. And then each section has an alignment with the educational standards. So for high school and middle school, so teachers who are needing to show that they're working according to standards, that's there for them. And it's kind of amazing how many places soil health does intersect, not just with ag standards, but with science and math and history and social studies, et cetera, and even English. There's some writing prompts in there. So there's standards, and there's a little overview, and then there are activities and worksheets that go along with the activities. So for example, there's one that's actually really taken off around the world where we're comparing a plate of bread and a plate of flour, and then students poke holes in a Dixie cup and rain on one landscape versus another, the flour being a stand-in for degraded soil. And the bread is like a stand-in for healthy, porous soil or a soil sponge. And you can see the runoff, you can see erosion, you can see mudslides, you can see drought and flooding happening at the same time on that plate of flour. In the plate of bread, it soaks it in and soaks it in and soaks it in. You can put about 9 times as much water on there and no flooding. It's holding it in that infill reservoir for later use. Doesn't fall apart. So it's a chance to really look at a whole system working. And then we take it outside and we do water infiltration testing. We do observation hoops to look at the surface of the soil, what's happening with management there, what are observable features that you might be able to see right from the surface as to how water might soak in or not. And what the implications of that might be. There's some things with history, like that quote from FDR of the nation that destroys its soil, destroys itself, and looking at the formation of the soil conservation district and how that relates to current situations. There's some questions about people just thinking about changes in the water cycle locally. What have they noticed in terms of rainfall patterns, in terms of water quality issues, flooding, drought, etc. And then there's a whole section with a fence line photo. It's kind of a well-known photo these days of two ranches in the Karoo region of southern Africa. And one side is really very, very vibrant, and the other looks like a desert, and they're right next door to each other. And there's a whole set of questions to think about, like, what would happen if you took your shoes off and stood on one side versus the other? How hot would it be on one side or the other? Which side would support more diversity? What might the co-benefits of that be? If water fell on one side or the other, how quickly would it evaporate? So a lot of things to get people just thinking about whole systems in a landscape and how they work together. So those are some examples.
Yeah, it's interesting, and you mentioned the standards and the way some of these, these areas in the curriculum are set up, and obviously it sounds like a classroom teacher would have a lot to pull out, but you'd also mentioned all these different organizations around the world and throughout the United States that had downloaded the curriculum in anticipation possibly for adult education. Has that fit pretty well in that? Have you watched or been involved in some of those adult education activities? And if so, how's that worked out and how's that translated over for adults beyond just the kids that really were the original target audience for the material?
Yes, I wrote this with all ages in mind. So I tried to write it in a way that wouldn't, you know, the language, I tend to use the word participants rather than students, and tried to keep the concept something that people of all ages could relate to. And that was an interesting way to keep myself honest as I was writing it, because I do believe that young people are just as intelligent as anybody of any other age, maybe sometimes more so.
And at least more open to new ideas anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's part of my being a respectful educator is to really value the intelligence of the learners. So I think it was sort of set up well that way. And yeah, there's a group called Kiss the Ground that does a lot of adult education. They have a whole speakers training for soil advocates, and they rely fairly heavily on some of the material in the manual. As I said, the Farmer Field School program through the UN, which teaches does farmer to farmer research projects and education throughout a lot of what's called the Global South, Africa, India, et cetera. They're using the manual heavily in their India project, but also in other places. And yeah, people have been pulling pieces from it to do as exercises in conferences and all sorts of, you know, there's a lot of college professors who've written that they're using it. So seems to be translating well.
We know you'd mentioned a lot of these initiatives with the UN and with Kiss the Ground and some of these other groups. What new and exciting education initiatives do you have in the pipeline right now? Is there anything additional that you're working on that kind of builds off of the curriculum, and what's some of the things that are out there now?
Well, so after I finished that draft of that, and I always call it a draft because there's always more to add, and I am currently working on a lot of material that should be added to that fairly soon. That prompted me to want to start teaching from it myself in a more formal way. And so I founded an online program called the Land and Leadership Initiative. The Land and Leadership Initiative is an umbrella that includes an annual conference or two that I put on, but founded an online aspect of that. And so I spent a lot of last year teaching partly from that manual and partly other things that I was working on as ideas. And the primary course that I taught about 8 times over to people, again, from around the world, all adults, was called Regenerating the Soil Sponge for Flood, Drought, and Wildfire Resilience. And that was really interesting who came into that. And I enjoy live teaching because I don't like to teach things the same way ever. That keeps my mind fresh and working and keeps the material fresh, is to see who's in the group, see where their interests are, and keep adapting it for them. So I did a lot of that last year and then realized I needed more foundational materials of basic concepts that could be handed out through that. So I'm right now working under a grant to develop what I'm calling seed media, which are kind of like fact sheets and short videos and cartoons, et cetera, that can form the foundation both for deeper courses through the Land and Leadership Initiative, but also for journalists, or a lot of people are writing and saying, you know, I'm thinking about writing a book about this. Do you have more footnoted resources? So we're trying to do some resources that have more of the science footnotes for those who need to back up their work, as well as being just a pot that everyone can draw on as they're trying to teach and write about this.
Well, Dee Dee, we're getting down toward the end of the interview, but you've mentioned a lot of things that the coalition has. You'd mentioned, of course, the curriculum that we worked together on, the maps that were put together, the online app, some of these new things that you're working on. If some of our listeners are interested in more information or would like to contact you, is there some information that they can, or a place that they can go where they can reach out to you or download some of this online? What would be the best way to get a hold of you if they're interested in more information?
Yes, probably the best place right now would be the website landandleadership.org, and the and in there is spelled out. It's not the symbol and. Or my own personal website is ddpershouse.com. ddpershouse.com has different resources than the Land and Leadership one, but the curriculum is on both sites. And I'll just also mention right now, because of what we're going through, the original book that I wrote called The Ecology of Care, and the subtitle is Medicine, Agriculture, Money, and the Quiet Power of Human and Microbial Communities. Quite a mouthful. That original book, The Ecology of Care, is suddenly very, very relevant to the stuff that we're going through right now with this pandemic. It's really about how do we have a sustainable system of care for people, for land, and for the whole, you know, the whole economic system. And all of those things are really coming up right now between this pandemic and all the stuff we've seen as wildfires, et cetera, over the last few years. So a book that had started to seem a few years old is suddenly very fresh again. So I'd encourage people to take a look at that. You can get it on Amazon or Kindle version as well. So,
well, outstanding. Well, Dee Dee, I appreciate that, and I appreciate you taking time out of your day to visit with us. Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast and talking with us about some of the things that you have going on.
Great. Thank you so much, Clay.
Well, and we thank all of you for listening today. Again, this has been an episode of the Southern Plains Podcast. Again, I'm Clay Pope. I'm with the USDA Southern Plains Climate Hub in El Reno, Oklahoma. And this podcast has been a joint venture of the Hub and the Redlands Community College Division of Agriculture, also located in El Reno. We thank each and every one of you for taking time out of your day to listen to this episode, and we hope that you have a wonderful day. Goodbye.